Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Therapy Notes, the number one trusted EHR among mental health professionals, just keeps getting better and better. With legendary customer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're giving you all the tools you need to succeed, whether you're a solo clinician or a group practice. Try them free for 2 months using promo code MODERN today.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast for therapists where we talk about the things that go on in our practices, the ways that we do things. This is another one of our throwback episodes. Well, Katie and I take some time off for the holidays. And last week, Katie had picked an old episode. We kind of reviewed that a little bit. This week, it's my turn. Woo-hoo! And I'm going back to one of my favorite episodes. It stands the test of time with us. There's a lot of things that we've talked about in the past that have been maybe a little bit dated or hyper-specific to some things that were going on at the time. But this is a topic that I bring up in a lot of lectures and workshops still to this day. There's been very little that I've had to update other than some of the references and some of the newer research that just more or less backs up what we had already said in the first place. But I have chosen for my throwback review episode, structuring self-care. And this was something that I was really excited about. We developed this for a conference in the past. We've presented it a couple of other times together. We've done it separately, but this is one of my favorite episodes that we've done of all time.
I like this episode too. I was excited when you chose it. I think it's something where it was work that both of us were doing, and we were asked to speak at a conference right before the pandemic, although we didn't know it was right before the pandemic, and hold together, I think, a lot of the work we've done. And just this feels like, you know, kind of one of our offerings to the world. And I think we even talked about writing a book about this.
Yes.
And so we started, hadn't gotten far with that. You know, there was like a pandemic or something, but it was developed, you know, completely before the pandemic. And so I feel like you said that not much has changed, but it feels like some things have had to have shifted in, you know, kind of what we talked about.
So the things that I've noticed that we've updated over the years and in listening back to this, one of the highlights, I guess, or one of the things that we really talked about is the idea of like work spillover, like taking work home with you. And then immediately after we presented this at that conference, and we spent the better part of a year plus like working from home, where that spillover effect had even more likeliness to happen, just because it's like, oh, rather than even having the drive home and like, oh, I can call my friend, or I can just like listen to music or award-winning podcasts, I can now just open my door and be immediately facing parenting, other stuff in my house, where there's not kind of that transition time or that, you know, kind of ceremonial putting your work into the side sort of aspect out of the day. It still holds true from when we originally talked about it. It's just a lot of the stuff that we talked about shifts from, okay, now you're doing this at work and you've got these things kind of naturally built into your day. It just is, you have to have a lot more intention about this when you are doing this at home.
Yeah, I know when I was asked to speak about it, there was definitely just adapting all the things we said, but to working at home. And so it does feel like there's so much value that's in this episode that became more and more relevant. And so I guess we knew what we were talking about, huh?
Yeah. You know, just kind of some of the other things that we had originally talked about in this episode is also just kind of around the social circles that you end up putting yourself in. And that a lot of times the people that you surround yourself with are the ones that are going to kind of be indicators of your lifestyle. And that is something that I come back to quite a bit, not only with the work with my clients, but also with myself and just kind of being like, who am I surrounding myself with? What's the energy that, you know, if I'm looking at those people being a reflection of who I am, who do I, you know, want to also, you know, kind of lift me up as far as overall kind of health and well-being kinds of things, but also what's the energy that I'm carrying from people that I have in my life that is also kind of positioning me to make unhealthy choices? And yeah. I think that that's been something that, you know, just as friendships and things have changed over the last couple of years, it's interesting to look at just kind of like, whether it be intentional shifts in like my social life or unintentional ones, people moving or that kind of stuff that have affected just kind of where my career, my personal life, my friendships have gone. And that's kind of a neat thing of going back and reviewing our own work from a few years ago, is just being able to look at where have I personally grown in applying some of these principles to myself as well.
I love that. I think to me, the thing that I've taken the most with is probably, you know, the time management and the other things. But when you were just talking about the social life stuff, like I've not consciously thought about it, but I think I've had that shift as well. So we're gonna dive into this so that you can listen and see what you think about our structuring self-care episode. I think there's so much real actionable stuff here. And so let us know, pop on a social media, send us an email. What do you think we missed? What do you think we should add? And do you want us to update this more than just reviewing it?
Enjoy the show. Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and we are headed to Hawaii this week, where we are going to be speaking on preventing compassion fatigue and creating structural self-care. And partially just as a preparation thing, it was just really easy for us to create an episode around these ideas that
we're pretty lazy. That's really what it comes down to.
We are creating an optimal state of flow in the content that we are producing.
Yes, we are.
And making things a little bit easier for ourselves. But this is also something that I think is really exciting and just want to share this with people. And, you know, obviously you can't buy tickets to the conference and just like end up in Hawaii later this week to come and see us talk. If you can, awesome. You know, we have dabbled in talking about self-care before. We are, you know, really kind of comprehensively bringing together a lot of ideas, business practices, working in agencies, if you're not yet a business owner, of how to actually start implementing some of this stuff in ways to really help keep you going as an individual and help make that a better opportunity to work with your clients and make your life more manageable.
We've talked about this in a lot of different ways from a lot of different angles. And I think the goal in this episode, and we'll certainly link to some of these other episodes in the show notes, but the goal in this episode is to really be able to create a cohesive narrative around how you actually do this thing. And I want to put the caveat that this is not necessarily like we don't know everything. We haven't mastered everything. This is really bringing things together because it's an ongoing work in progress. So this is not saying like, hey, we've got this nailed. And so just do this thing and it's super easy and you won't get any compassion fatigue and you won't be vicariously traumatized and you'll never be burnt out. Because I think that those things, while not necessarily required in our field, not necessarily a foregone conclusion, I think that they are very, very common, even in folks who have put together some good practices in setting up their careers. So I just want to put that out there, because I don't want us to come from a place of like, we're totally fine. Because like by the time, you know, we think about this episode again, we're going to be on the beach in Hawaii. And
which so is actually one of the principles that we're going to be talking on a little bit later here. But as far as some different influences here, I think the first one that I want to point out is a reference that I already made in this episode to flow psychology. And this was really started by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and one of the founding people of positive psychology. And if you're not familiar with this work, a lot of Csikszentmihalyi's writings really come around optimizing the energies, the attitudes, the structures of your day. So that way you're not running into these emotional barriers. You're being able to really develop a flow of being able to tackle the tasks of your day in a way that is mindful and present and all of the things that led to positive psychology. And so you're going to get some of that sprinkling throughout here today, as well as some of just kind of how this works into our business practices.
And I think one of the books that I always mention, and so we'll talk about it a lot today, or at least we'll reference it, and some of the ideas will be coming from there, is the book When from Daniel Pink. It kind of, I think, pairs really nicely with this idea of flow. Question though, Kurt, because I have
one more book reference before.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
For our longtime listeners, you know that I've been involved in the running community before. Another book that we're pulling some ideas from here is Peak Performance, Elevate Your Game, Avoid Burnout, and Thrive with the New Science of Success by Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus. So now for your question.
Okay, so the question is about flow, and I may bring up other books later, so don't worry. All of these will be in the show notes at mtsgpodcast.com. But my thought process around flow, or the way I understood it back in the dark ages when I went to grad school, was it was this almost dissociative state of being able to do something for a very long period of time and kind of losing track of time and that kind of stuff. And that's not really how you're describing it. So,
and in fact, I would almost describe it as the opposite, which not being dissociated, but being incredibly mindful. Mm-hmm. And in studying peak performers and having been involved in athletics and working with high achieving and gifted teens in my practice, all of the research that I come across says that those who perform the best are the ones who tolerate the mindlessness the best. That when we get a diminishing amount of return on our practice, you know, let's use golf as an example. I'm a really bad golfer.
Okay.
But if I went out and I, you know, got a golf instructor, that I would expect that I would see some pretty significant returns on my investment to improving in golf very, very quickly. I might go from being a, you know, 10%, you know, bottom 10% golfer. You know, after a few lessons, I might jump up to, you know, a 25th percentile golfer just because I have that much room to grow.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about, you know, people at the 90th percentile, for them to get to the 91st percentile involves a lot more work to just get that 1%. And so the people who tolerate the extra work psychologically the best are the ones who are able to see that return. And this is where flow comes in. This is where being mindful of the payoff of the work that we're doing, understanding the concept of it and embracing it, is an incredibly mindful aspect. It's not a dissociative aspect. Now, one of the keys in being able to tolerate that might be dissociating. You know, but it's done with intention.
Yeah, no, I think what I was trying to mention, maybe not dissociation, although sometimes for me when I get really into something, that's kind of all of a sudden, it's more the losing of time, that time ceases to exist when you're doing the thing that you're good at, you enjoy, that just seems to, it kind of, I think the ways that I've seen it, you know, especially with artists and kind of creative folks that I've worked with and you know, in my past, it's just like this piece of things kind of just flow through you. And it's, and I think in kind of olden times, and maybe even now for folks who are more spiritual, that it feels like it comes from this otherworldly place. And so it just feels so right. So that's why I wanted to clarify, because it feels like there may be colloquial and other versions of flow. So how are we defining flow?
So I like where you're going with this. And I think that, you know, part of this is we work in a profession where we can't afford to just have time go by with endlessly, because we are tied to the clock. We're tied to that 50-minute hour. Yeah. But really, the essence that we're talking to is this is the difference between those sessions where it felt like you just sat down and then all of a sudden it's over, versus a session that I had somewhat recently where, I looked to check on the clock to see how much time was left, and there was 48 minutes left in the session. So,
oh, I've been in those sessions, dude. I've been in those sessions.
So for us, flow is the working idea that we're working with here is that it's the absence of mental load, of it's moving towards reducing the amount of mental load that we're putting into things, reducing decision fatigue in our lives. So that way we are better able to accomplish the tasks that we are either obligated to do or that we want to do as part of our practices and part of our profession. Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate up front. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions. I think I want to add to that also doing things that really feel aligned and attuned for yourself, things that you're good at that you feel a sense of competence for as well. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that those are going to go hand in hand because, you know, I'm a parent. Part of decision-making fatigue is, you know, all right, what are we going to do to get the kids out the door in the morning? And what are we going to do when the kids don't want to do the things that I've already decided on that just start, you know, chipping away at your mental energy that go into the day. So by the time that you end up in the office, you might be somewhat depleted. I know you're a big fan of the spoon theory. Like, you know, you want to show up to work with as many spoons as you have to be able to go with your clients. But in so many ways, it's being able to prepare yourself and create a avenue in your life to reduce the amount of times that you have to stop and make a decision. You know, this is putting out your workout clothes the night before so that way you don't have to do those tasks in the morning, that it's a preparation to be able to just kind of flow through the day. This, if you haven't picked up already, really is in that whole person therapist that Katie and I talk about so often of this extends into your personal life very, very deeply, and it extends into your professional life very, very deeply as well. Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR for behavioral health, and it's easy to see why. They combine billing, scheduling, documentation, and more into one sleek, easy-to-use platform, and they're always adding new features to help therapists provide better care to their patients.
Therapy Notes allows you to do it all, whether you're a solo clinician or part of a group practice. And with their new 24/7 hours, they're ready to assist you no matter where your practice takes you. Learn more at therapynotes.com and use promo code MODERN for 2 months free. One of the ways, I mean, I want to switch from flow because I think that there is some kind of practical stuff that I might be able to offer here. Because I think when you're talking about decreasing decision fatigue or the number of decisions that you make and really making sure that your day, you know, kind of systemically or systematically moves through, that you're not constantly getting stopped and, you know, kind of clunky going through the day. I think part of it is really identifying how to set up your day in a way that makes sense. And so there's two pieces. And this is where I really like the book When, because it talks about the study around when to do things. And so, you know, when are you most creative? When are you most effective? How do you to counterbalance those things? And I don't want to go into all those little tiny pieces, but I think the biggest thing that I think can be very helpful is being able to study the energy that you have or the the motivation you have, because some of us are night owls, some of us are early birds, some of us have energy at different times of the day. And so it actually requires some self-assessment in order to be able to identify how you create your kind of flowing workday. And so putting creative activities when you're most creative, or putting more kind of rhythmic, not needing a whole lot of energy activities when you have less energy, it helps things to flow more easily because you've actually designed it based on your natural workflow versus, or your natural energy flow versus doing other things. And so in a systems view, when we've got a Monday morning meeting and we all have to kind of jump into the work week and face people, even if we're introverted, you know, when we have, you know, massive amounts of notes to do and everybody's telling us to do it first thing in the morning or last thing in the evening or that kind of stuff without really reference to what our mental acuity is or what our energy is at that time, I think putting systems in place is important for organizations, for workplaces, but I think having the flexibility to kind of manage individual differences can become very important because we are different. There's similarities, but we are different in when we're best doing different activities. And so I think being able to have some flexibility and self-assessment to design your schedule a bit to match your energy levels is really important.
Not only is it really important, but this is embracing this idea and actually implementing it. And it's being able to take those individual differences that we may have and being able to put that into, you know, you said that we're trying to move away from this idea of flow, but this is all flow. This is this is taking those individual differences and being able to really embrace that. You know, most corporate management recommendations now are don't start Monday mornings with staff meetings, that we have this behavioral inertia coming off of the weekend where we're just, you know, not working, we're not focused on what we're doing, that is important for us to have because where our optimal growth comes and where we are best able to reach our performance, no matter what field that we're in, comes from being able to balance both stress and rest. And if we're in a constant stress state, then we're not able to really ever grow. Think of, you know, a child who's malnourished or who's, you know, constantly, you know, overexerting themselves, not sleeping enough, that child is not going to grow compared to a child who is resting. Think of yourself as far as when your creativity comes. It's the mm-hmm. last days of your vacation. It's the Sunday night before the weekend or the Sunday night before the work week starts when you have these ideas that you can implement. But if you're constantly in that work state, then you don't have that breathing time to actually sit down and be creative. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is where so much of what is talked about in terms of burnout is in this reactionary method. And I don't think that those of us who have really talked about preventing burnout have really done a good enough job of is talking about how this rest period allows us to go into work better. That mm-hmm. it seems as kind of this precautionary, like, don't let this happen, but it's, you know, avoiding a negative as opposed to resting for a positive. And I've really seen this, you know, a tremendous amount with athletes in marathon training. You know, rest is as important as stress, but it's the balance of the two of them that allows us to elevate what we're able to tolerate. That you don't just start out running 100 miles a week at, you know, your sprinting pace, that you've got to be able to go into that with the intention of, okay, these things are going to be done slowly because that allows us to get to this concept of being able to perform at a higher level.
I think what I've seen the most around this is that people will see the rest as blank spots or as emptiness, and then it can get filled, right? And so when you were talking about kind of, I see it as kind of this interval training, you know, whether it's kind of intervals within the run or, you know, I don't run on a certain day because I'm actively resting or I'm actively regenerating. And I think physically we can see it a lot better than we can mentally or emotionally. And so I think being able to consciously do it is really important. But when I was thinking about it, because I just was talking with one of my clients about drawing on the right side of, or drawing on the right side of the brain or the left side of the brain. I don't remember the, I'll find the right name for the book and put it in the show notes. But we learn how to draw what's there. And so we'll draw a face and we'll have eyes and a nose and a mouth. But when you actually, you know, draw really well, it's looking at the negative spaces. It's looking at what's not there. And it's actually, you draw the negative spaces in order. And that's how you truly become more of an artist versus someone that's doodling, is learning to see both what's there and what's not there. And I think for me, that's a big difference, is that when you actively block out rest and you use it, whether it's a break in the middle of the day, if it's a full day without anything on your schedule, like if it's the end of the day when you go home and you don't have anything on the books, although probably you do, it's actually putting that there instead of just saying, well, I'll rest at some point. You know, putting in those blank spaces as actual real things versus hoping that you'll get to the rest at some point.
It's not only intentional, but it's active rest, not passive rest. It's not just like, okay, I've got half an hour between clients, I'm just going to collapse on my couch and stare at the ceiling. It's being able to step outside your office and go for a quick walk outside. I know that the differences between my next sessions after each of those kinds of rests vary completely based on the choice that I make.
Well, and I think there's, I do want to say that naps have been something, and I know you're also a fan of naps, but I think naps
Love
can also
naps.
Be an active, that can be an active rest. I think that's something, Daniel Pink calls it a nappuccino. He drinks a little bit of coffee and then takes a 20-minute nap, and it's like he starts over with the morning energy. So I think we don't want to say don't collapse on your couch, and I really wish that workplaces would, you know, embrace this idea of napping, but both of those things. The inactive rest is collapsing on your couch with your phone and scrolling through Facebook.
Right. And, you know, also for those of you overachievers out there, that it's not a replacement for the other sleep that you get in addition to that nap.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because our growth does come when we're sleeping. And I think that this is such a huge aspect that, you know, we try to maximize so much in our lives, but when all of our maximization comes around our work, that's a recipe for burnout.
Yes.
But it's also, you know, you got to be able to rest in your best way that comes in addition to work. You know, you can't go out and party every single night and show up and see your clients every single day in the morning too. But, you know, you might still have that extroverted itch that you need to scratch that can be part of what you're doing. It's being intentional with it. So that way you can understand what you're best able to do and best be able to implement to show up to your clients, show up to your business, and be able to tackle on the stressors that are going to be coming along with that.
I think to me, the biggest thing that I want to comment about that, and then I'd love to talk to kind of more specifically on kind of systemic scheduling, but with the notion of productivity, or for entrepreneurs, hustle, or even people that have, you know, they're working in an agency and they've got a private practice on the side, like the difficulty with this concept that we're talking about is that there are so many societal factors and systemic factors that say you have to keep moving. And so I think this is something where, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, taking that rest, you know, kind of managing your schedule so it's more paced out, so that you have some open spaces, some buffers, and that kind of stuff actually makes you more productive. You're more likely to get better productivity, get your notes done. You're more likely to be able to close those full fee clients if you consciously put these things in place. Because when we're exhausted, when we're at decision fatigue, when we're not doing the things that we need to do, we start making decisions that are really ineffective. So we could either start running in the wrong direction and you know, kind of have big impacts of like we've lost our way. But it can even be the kind of the inefficiency, which I always see it when I'm running late. It's like I have to get out of the house and I know I have to pick up my lunch, I have to pick up some water, I have to get my jacket, I got to get my bag. And it's something where when I'm just walking out of the house, it's like pick up, pick up, pick up, pick up. When I'm running late, it's like, oh, I got to get this. Oh, I got to go to here. Oh, let's go. And it takes me probably three times as long to get out of the house when I'm running late as when I'm actually consciously with all of the space able to walk out of the house with everything that I need. So I think it's counterintuitive because there's such a hustle mindset, but I think we need to really be conscious about it.
And, you know, an example of this and the way that it comes up in our sessions is, you know, I'm not perfect. There's days where I end up, you know, getting to my office, like, you know, a couple of minutes after the session's supposed to start, parking, traffic, whatever it might be. Whether it's me in that situation or whether it's a client in that situation who's running a few minutes late, I still very intentionally take the next few minutes and not just usher the client into my office and be like, okay, we're running late. We got to pick up on this. And I talk with my clients about why I do this, but it's for these very specific principles that we're talking about here, is that if we're starting in this rush state, it's not productive. That we go into the sessions intentionally with the same energy and the same level of focus. So that way we are best able to use that time. Because in those rush sessions where somebody's just like storming in and, you know, taking off their jacket while, you know, they're talking about, you know, what it is, why they're late, has that ever been a productive first 5 minutes of a session?
No.
No.
Not at all.
And so if the 5 minutes is going to be wasted anyway, using that to be mindful of what it is that we're going to accomplish seems counterintuitive, but it is way more productive because it does set that intentionality. Not only does Therapy Notes combine billing, scheduling, notes, secure messaging, group telehealth, and more into one streamlined platform, they're also always adding new features and forms to their library. So no matter your specialty, Therapy Notes has you covered.
Learn more at therapynotes.com and use promo code MODERN for 2 months free.
Yeah. Now, I'm doing a lot better with these kinds of things and transitioning to, you know, some of these time implementation things that can happen. These all need to be adjusted for what you as the individual are. And, you know, here's a quick shout out to our listeners who have stopped listening to us on their car rides in to go see their clients because they just need that space to decompress before they go in their day. Congratulations. You are doing exactly what we're talking about. You're taking that emotional space for yourself.
Yeah.
Hope that, you know, we'll tag as many of you as we can who have
so that you'll
out
listen to
us
this eventually.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, this is also, once you get to your office, of being able to prime yourself for the clients that you have during that day. So that way you're best able to keep your emotional energy in the realm of, you know, reducing all of this decision fatigue, staying in a positive mood state. And this is the time to really do the things of like deliberate practice of reviewing what you're doing. So that way you're able to pick up on, oh, here's practice that I need to be doing. Now I have an opportunity to go and do it. This is not superfluous, like, hey, on the weekend sort of thing, I'm going to, you know, go do all my deliberate practice work. But this is really being able to do it before you start seeing your clients during the day. You know, spend your 10 minutes reviewing a video session. Go through your notes. Be ready for your client as they come in. Don't just be like, so what were we talking about? That, you know, where do we want to pick up on? You know, here's a smattering of things that I kind of remember from last session. But putting yourself in that primed state to be ready for where your clients are coming back in.
I like the idea of ritual, and that's how I see it. I don't necessarily see myself as priming, but as ritual. I like that because to me, I'm a systems person. I like to have some routine and ritual. And so for me, the way I walk up my stairs to my office, the things I do when I get into my office, the mindfulness that I approach with turning the lights on and those types of things, as well as reviewing the notes and taking the time to review my notes prior to entering the session, the deep breath and the grounding and the ritual throughout the session, and then also the decompression and the space to kind of close out that session and prepare for the next one if I need it. I think those things are very important to do. And oftentimes when we're overwhelmed, we don't do them. I think the other thing that can happen, and I want to add this into this idea of ritual, is that we can be so overwhelmed and disorganized that we don't feel like we have the space to do it. And so I'm a big fan of making, you know, repeatable processes, having your clients have as much as possible set meeting times so that you're not constantly futzing with your schedule, you know, really creating some of these things that can take those decisions away. So you don't have to decide what you're going to send to your client the first, you know, for the first session. You don't have to decide how you're going to do your note. There's, you know, you've got a template that's really easy to do and you can just finish it very quickly. But making sure that you've got all of those things already thought about and made as efficient as possible so they don't get in the way of the actual work, which is the connecting with your client and the clinical work that the two of you do together. Because I think so often, because we're not trained in business, because most of us would rather be working with clients than writing notes or you know, billing clients or whatever, that we don't pay attention to those external things. And so we're writing the same email over and over again. And we're, you know, deciding each week what the client's next session is going to be. And, you know, and I'm feeling it right now because I've got my schedule a little wonky and I've got, you know, like two or three clients who are new that are also like shifting jobs and doing things. And so I'm like having to schedule with them each week. And it just I can feel that additional mental load that comes with not having that set and not being able to just say, I'll see you next week. You know, that is really great when you've created these systems and rituals throughout. The next piece, and I think you were going to potentially talk about this, I'll let you talk about it, but it's just kind of making sure that you have that decompression time and the closing out ritual.
Yes. Before we get to that though, I also want to talk about the people that you surround yourself with are also going to either elevate you or drag you down. And, you know, I heard of, you know, the five people that surround you are the ones who are going to have the biggest impact on your life. So if you're surrounded by other people who are working towards these same sort of flow objectives, that it's going to be a lot easier for you to implement. And this is, you know, the accountability buddies are the ones who are really helping you do that. So, you know, we're happy that you're a part of our community and maybe we're your accountability buddy here, but getting these systems in place really does take that intentionality. But it's also the positivity or the negativity of those who are around you, which does lead to kind of this closing out procedure. You know, we want to be able to leave work at work. Don't take your notes home. We actually do your work at work. Stay an extra 15, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is at work. So that way you've emotionally left what needs to be in that workspace at your workspace.
Or just to honor those who need to go home. And if you did the 20 to 30 minutes, it would turn into 3 hours of trying to get your notes done because you're staring at the wall. Set time in the morning to come back and do the notes. Don't do them at home.
And I noticed this, you know, great improvement in the attitudes of the therapists working in my practice when I forbid them from doing notes at home. And this was to just kind of help further increase morale around the idea of, okay, I like what I do. I like this job. And that does help in just being able to let home be a space to be creative, be restful. Another aspect too is being able to decompress at the end of the day with like-minded people. And we've referenced this a lot before of, you know, make that phone call that can happen to, you know, your friends that's just like, oh, I had a stressful day. Here's a couple of things that happened. We all do it. Do it with intention.
Yeah.
And I think that's what allows, you know, seasoned therapists to, you know, see several stressful clients during the day, several high-risk clients during the day is when we have those systems in place to decompress, where earlier on, and you know, even some of the students that I teach that talk about I can't turn off at the end of the day. Well, you need to have a space to emotionally put all of that energy too.
Okay, so there's two things. One is I want to acknowledge and shout out to fellow home-based online therapists that may not be able to not take work home because that's where their work is. The way I've worked this out is trying to create a separate space that I can physically leave. You know, it needs to be a private space anyway, and so being able to, whether it's closing the laptop and putting it away, if you're able to have your whole home be a space where you can do your work, Or for me, I have my office and I really try to turn off and move away. And so there are ways to do this kind of whatever setting you're in. I think it comes back to ritual. I think the other piece about the kind of the decompression, and I think this comes back to the systemic places, is you're talking about kind of call your friends intentionally. I think for organizations or group practices or groups of people who are working together in some way, I think having an intentional space for processing vicarious trauma, for, you know, kind of closing out and finishing the day. I know for me, that was a lifesaver in community mental health, is being able to talk to my peers and my supervisors about what had happened, what was going on, and even getting ideas. Like for me, it was, you know, getting in my car and opening all the windows and driving home and kind of imagining all of the day, you know, kind of blowing out the window and looking at how do I consciously turn off versus continuing to kind of ruminate over, I'm not going to meet productivity, or I, that insurance claim was denied, or this client, you know, was, you know, suicidal and I think they're going to be okay, but are they going to be okay? Like, I think the things that can stick with us, I think being able to consciously refocus and not like, don't think about it. Cause it's like, don't think about elephants. And all I'm thinking about is elephants, but like being able to really refocus on yourself as a whole person, on what the other parts of your life are going to be, what you're going to be doing in the evening, and having some physical and or, you know, kind of emotional elements that are going to be very different, you know, whether it's getting active or having a heart to heart with a friend or whatever it is. I think it's important to be very conscious and for systems to be able to put in place that space. Because I think so often we're so focused on productivity and getting as much done as possible that those spaces get lost, and it really harms clinicians.
So we will include links to the stuff that we referenced in our show notes. You can find those at mtsgpodcast.com. And until next time, I'm Kurt Whithelm with Katie Renoy. Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code modern therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Thanks so much to our partner, Therapy Notes, the highest rated practice management solution for behavioral health. Don't forget, using promo code MODERN gets you 2 free months.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.